Welcome to the Information Security Forum podcast. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert.
It comes down to that human element. You know, they're either the first line of defense or they're the weakest link. And it's really up to the organizational leadership and how they approach risk management, how they look at the human element that determines which one they are.
That was today's guest, Jeff Engel, veteran of the United States Army Special Operations Command and current Vice President and General Manager of Federal for United Data Technologies. In this episode of the ISF podcast, we bring you the first of three conversations with Jeff and ISF Managing Director Steve Durbin. In today's episode, Jeff describes his background as a military veteran and a private sector cybersecurity leader, and shares his insights into what the corporate world can learn from military organization and training protocols.
I graduated high school a little bit early, and I always knew that I wanted to go into the military. So I convinced my dad to sign off on a waiver when I was 17. So I went in, and I was always into science and then mathematics, technology. So I ended up going in specializing in weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear weapons. It just so happened that as I was finishing my initial training and starting an advanced reconnaissance course, September 11th happened. Mm-hmm. So they came into the room and said, hey, you're going to war, and that kind of defined the next 11 years of my life. I got recruited into special operations while I was on my third deployment, and I was kind of found that I was always in the wrong job throughout my military service and also post-military. So I ended up doing things like working on jamming technology and communication security while I had, you know, a litany of other jobs. Later in my special operations career, through a number of deployments, I ended up getting injured. So I got moved from the special operations community to a defense agency where I was conducting critical infrastructure vulnerability assessments on DoD assets around the world. And I started teaching risk management. So they flew me over to Kuwait and Iraq and Afghanistan, not only to do the assessments, but also to teach them how to do a more integrated risk management strategy that touched everything from physical security and base defense to emergency management response and also some of their telecommunication security. At the same time, I moonlighted. They pulled me into the DoD Red Team. So I was looking at some higher value assets within the Department of Defense and the larger national security base, both the industrial side and government controlled. So that was kind of my first entrance into what I consider to be real cybersecurity type of operations. And it was directly in response to both Snowden and Manning events. So I kind of looked at insider threat more than anything else. So I got medically retired. I finished grad school while I was in that that last assignment, and then I transitioned to the other side of the industrial base, figuring out how to get money back from the government for the industrial base, for lack of a better term. But I still focused on things I thought were important, where it was critical that the commercial and non-government world needed to support, you know, our government efforts. So that focused around technology modernization, cybersecurity, and still the weapons of mass destruction. I've always kind of focused on the things I thought, you know, the smallest group of semi-organized people could have the greatest amount of impact. And it started with weapons of mass destruction and kind of is now, you know, includes cyber there. So, you know, now my, you know, my career is within a technology company focused on secure digital transformation. You know, you announced, obviously, I'm the VP and GM of Federal at UDT. The most recent occurrence is now through an acquisition. I'm now the chairman and president of our federally focused cybersecurity and digital transformation company. It's called Conquest. So I'm dual-hatted within those two roles. And I'm focused on, you know, the national security arena, those customers that are taking on the largest missions within cyber and within WMD and trying to help them transform digitally. So it's been an interesting ride, I would say. I've kind of been a little bit all over the map, but the kind of the foundation of all of that that I learned in my formative years in special operations is really just basic risk management. It applies to everything, really understanding what's important to you and understanding who wants to negatively impact what's important to you. I think generally speaking, we try to overcomplicate that piece of it. And that's typically what is missed. You know, we have tons of technologies out there. And we try to technology our way out of problems, but, you know, we never really do the analysis of what's important for us to protect. So that's, you know, my soapbox that I try and preach and go back to the foundation of just basic enterprise risk management before, you know, we throw a bunch of technology at problems we face.
It sounds like you're in alignment with Steve's view that it's not just technology, but people. You're dealing with people.
Right.
And that's the key that a lot of people miss, I think. You believe that people underestimate human beings, human behavior, and human habit.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that there is always, you know, we enjoy playing with the next new shiny toy. And I think that technology companies in general have, you know, their job is to bring out new technology. Their job is to try to increase the adoption of that new technology. And you know, I'm not for 1 minute going to sit here and say it doesn't play a valuable role. Of course it does. But there is also the human element to it. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we constantly struggle with from a security standpoint is the role of the individual. You know, it is that dependence, if you like, that the individual then has on technology to do the job. And that is, as you were talking there, Jeff, that gave rise to one particular question that I have, is that, you know, from a military standpoint, yes, presumably you have all of this technology available when you're going on an operation, but you also have to plan for it not functioning. Tell us a little bit about that and perhaps how we might learn from that in the private sector, in the corporate sector today.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm going to cause you to suffer through a story related to that. Prior to my third deployment, it was the early 2004 timeframe where there was a shift that was happening from basically the invasion and everyone's happy that we're there, except for the ones who weren't. And then the transition to the really a lot of the IED type of attacks and the insurgency being built. So we shifted from, you know, essentially desert warfare to close quarters battle with a military, a traditional military, conventional side, not special operations necessarily, that was used to doing that open field type of warfare. That's what we trained for. I mean, it was there were red stars on the helmets of the things that we shot at, not the type of insurgency that we ended up facing. So, you know, like we do, we spend a bunch of money on technology. We actually had boxes and boxes of optics and flashlights and things like that to be mounted to our weapons that were kind of designed around the intent of close quarters battle. But they failed to actually order the brackets to attach them to the weapons. So we went through a 13-month deployment and they spent millions of dollars on technology that we could not use for the entire time. I think, to your point, you know, my experience in special operations was the focus on the basics. Everybody thinks about, you know, the Navy SEALs and special ops guys that are jumping out of airplanes and scuba diving in and have all the cool gear. And that's not really the reality. If you look at jumping out of an airplane is a method of infiltration that is one of the least desirable because it has the highest level of risk. Diving in and taking a beach just isn't realistic when you're in the middle of the desert. So things like shooting as like a foundational basic principle and physical fitness are what at the highest level of our special operations within the U.S. is the primary focus. Yes, the guys are great with demo and cyber and, you know, 1,000 methods of infiltration. But when it comes down to it, when you're in a room, it's whether or not you can shoot better, faster, and work through the scenario without becoming fatigued that are the biggest differentiator on the battlefield. So the basics, not just in terms of technology, but the basics in terms of approach, I think are the most valuable thing. And if you don't master the basics and focus on the basics, you can focus on the, you know, the sexy stuff like the coolest way to get in and the gun with 57 different attachments to it, which, by the way, negatively impact your ability to shoot straight. You're going to have 1,000 different challenges associated with technology, like bringing batteries that are wrong. You know, sometimes for some of these organizations, the difference between a AA and a AAA battery is whether or not you have mission success or mission failure. So it's the basics. It's also the basics and forethought around the technology, always having a backup. I mean, if your optics go out, you still need to be able to shoot, right? Those types of things and that thought process or something I found is unfortunately really unique to the special operations community I grew up in. Right? It really is a no-fail mission mentality where there's nobody to come if what you were doing didn't work. So there's redundancy built in, the basics are focused on, And I would take those guys with that mentality on a good selection process and put them into any scenario, and they'll be an expert faster than people who've, you know, been focusing on it for years or even decades. And that's just the types of people that I grew up with, the types of people they found and selected. Those people, they're the difference. And when you take that and extrapolate that out to cybersecurity, both in the commercial sector and national security arena, it comes down to that human element that you talked about. You know, they're either the first line of defense or they're the weakest link in your risk management strategy. And it's really up to the organizational leadership and how they approach risk management, how they look at the human element of their enterprise that determines which one they are.
And how well do you think that's understood in the private sector today?
Not well. If you think of it from an agency perspective or a business perspective, their objectives are usually pretty straightforward, right? It's to make money, produce more products, increase shareholder value, mm-hmm. and they have a fiduciary responsibility to do that. We're just starting to turn the corner and to see that cybersecurity is a necessary component of those primary goals. And because we're just starting to see it, the people who've come up all through their entire careers now that are in leadership, they've been focused on one of those things and not the other. Hmm. So I think until we have kind of a generational change, it's going to be individual cases that are the exception, not the rule, where the company leadership really understands how critical a good risk management strategy is and understand risk management in very specific terms. You know, you see the career paths of people within the commercial marketplace. Typically, it's a great sales guy gets promoted, right? And if they have success in that, then they get promoted more. And there is a culture associated with that career path that is essentially the antithesis of risk management. It's take more risk. It's get more ROI. And you have their yang, then the yin and yang arrangement. It's the risk management person who's always saying why, giving all the reasons not to do something. So really, until you have a hybrid of those where they've had experience really understanding the risk that they're taking, not necessarily stopping the risk from happening, but understanding it at least, and understanding how to drive business value, then we're going to have a conflict. And CISOs are going to be fired frequently, and you know, CEOs are going to get black eyes and lose billions of dollars during their M&A activities when their breaches get uncovered. But I think those ultimately are valuable because that exposure will allow us to change the way we approach it and fill the funnel with people who've experienced both sides of that.
Thanks for tuning in to the first of our three-part series with Jeff Engel. Be sure to listen for our second episode, in which Jeff focuses on creating a cyber-resilient corporate culture.
Jiu-jitsu as a martial art is the reason I'm passionate about it and why I got into it is because it's very similar to cybersecurity. You know, you train for 10 to 15 years before you get your black belt, and then you really start to learn.
We know you'll look forward to that conversation. In the meantime, for additional podcasts, videocasts, and more resources for CISOs and anyone looking to enhance the security of their business, please visit securityforum.org. And we'd like to hear from you. If there's a topic you'd like us to cover or someone you'd like us to interview, get in touch through our website or tweet us at Security Forum. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with you next time.